tired. And yeah. The dude is, I'm going to get over there at about noon. Well, no way. And I got someone coming here at noon. I'm probably going to go there at like 2:00 and he is going to be fucking so hammered.
You're that, going to mow. We missed that part. You're going to go mow.
I'm
going to
go mow his field
for a drunk janitor.
For a super drunk janitor.
Who just fucking, to be a nice guy.
Oh, hell no. He overpays me.
Yeah.
I actually, the only beer I've had in a long time was with this guy. About 3 years ago, I mowed his field, and afterwards he was paying me, and he asked me if I wanted a beer. I said no, and he got real fucking pissed off, saying he doesn't trust anyone that doesn't drink and all this shit. And I was like, well, okay. So I drank a Rolling Rock with him, and it was it was kind of hard.
Deborah's on the phone. We got it on speaker. Deborah, are you there?
I'm trying to join.
You're trying to join the meeting.
It says I'm unable to join.
That's stupid.
I've been having that problem.
Well, let me type in all that. Let's see. What did you, 817-752-0-2411.
Why don't you, do you have like 2 internet browsers? This is the height, we're podcasting right now, Deborah. This is the height, this is the height of podcasting.
It's a call-in show.
Try it like on like Chrome if you've been using Explorer or something like that.
Okay. All right.
It's not letting you enter the meeting ID.
That's what I'm trying to do, and it won't let me enter the last 4 digits.
Or are you just doing the 12 digit? Yeah. It won't let you enter 5721.
Correct.
Weird. And then you're not getting the emails?
I got the email and I hit the link, and usually I just, you know, have to open it and all's well, but not today.
Huh. Well, do you want me to send it to your other email?
Yeah, send it to my the Google one.
Okay. I'll do that.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Thanks. Sorry.
Okay, guys. In case you missed it, this is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode like 125 or something like that. We are having technical difficulties. 1/3 of the show is not able to get in. We'll work on it. It's 7:45 in the morning. This is on record the earliest we've ever recorded a show in the history of the show. Deborah is the only old person I know that likes to sleep in. And so I'm really happy that she woke up for this one, but let's see, hopefully we can get her into the show. But my neighbor came over 2 days ago on Tuesday to try to hay our field. He took a couple steps out into the pasture and was like, I can't drive out here, I'll rut up your field way too bad. So it's still pretty wet out there. I took the tractor out there yesterday for the first time. I got this really cool tool, like a $20 little chunk of metal at Tractor Supply that you hook up to a chain, and it can pull T-posts out with the bucket. Well, you hook a chain up to a bucket, and then the chain hooks to the end of this little piece of metal. It's got like a slot where you can slide the chain in, you know? And then it's got like a triangle that goes over a T-post, and I had it hooked up to the garbage forks on my bucket, and then you just lift the bucket up and it pulls it, the tension pulses, like grabs the T-post and pulls it up.
Oh, that's great. I have a hand version of that. It's like, I don't know, maybe 4 feet tall, bent in half. Then a handle that's the length of it lifts out, and then it's got just a little bit that sticks out from the main part, and that fits perfectly in between the bumps on a T-post.
Yeah.
And then you just push down and it pulls it right up. There's also a chain that hangs off of it, so you can take another length of chain and put it around bigger posts and things like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. It's a hassle though if you're doing widespread long fence posts, where they're, you know, 12 or more feet apart. because you got to carry it from one to another. And then if you're carrying your posts with you, it's something you probably want to use in combination with the bucket on your tractor.
Yeah, I've got a ton of old rusted out barbed wire and like no climb fence that I'm tearing out. Mm-hmm. And it'd be a lot easier if there was nothing. And then there's like part of the pasture has like fence that's still good in it. It'd be a lot easier if it was just all, if there's nothing there. It's hard.
If it was all trash and you just have to pull it all up and
It's hard to kind of like scab onto everything else. But there's a bunch of like railroad ties buried in the ground that are like awesome fence posts that are still there. So I'm going to try to make those
work. Are they horizontal? Like they're laying down in the ground and just sunken in?
No, they're vertical. They've been using them for fence posts for however long that fence has been up.
Yeah, that's great. Those work great, especially if they're like real deal ones, not Home Depot ones.
Oh, they're covered in oil and
But environmentalists will tell you not to use that, but it preserves them, that's for sure.
Yeah. There's like when it rains. Well, there's standing water in the field still. You can see there's like oil and there's you can, it's like rainbow, you know, you can see it in the pasture out there. And when my neighbor came over, I was like, man, I think there's like some sort of buried like old oil receptacle that's leaking or something. And he's like, nah, he's like, they have that. That's how it is on my pasture too. He's like, this land was all logged 100 years ago and it's all just the remnants of that.
Oh shit.
Like it's in everything out here, but I mean, my pasture grows perfect and like the grass is good and doesn't clump up. So
yeah, that's the bottom line, is if everything's doing okay now. I mean, we face that all the time anyway. The conversations get there of that, like, well, there's the poison's being sprayed in the sky. It doesn't matter if you're spraying it on your fields or not, it's coming down, it's getting in there. Yeah, that all sucks. And the best answer is for everyone to quit using poison. But if we can make things work with the levels of poison that exist, then we're doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's trying to get stuff done out here. It sucks. It's going to rain for the next 5 days and it never ends, man. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, we just got 25 new birds yesterday.
Meat birds,
26. They sent an extra one. They're either Cornish cross or possibly Cornish rock.
Yeah, I've never heard of those ones, but
we ordered Cornish cross. The invoice says Cornish rock. We sent him an email asking for clarification, but they haven't responded. But looking them up, it seems like they're almost the same bird. Maybe the Cornish rock grow a little bit slower, needing an extra week or two.
Yeah, I'd always tell people to go with a slower growing bird if you're doing it on a homestead or hobby farm or your backyard like I did. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because those Cornish crosses are good and they're the ones that everybody does, but man, it just seems weird how big they get, how fast, and how they're just eating machines, you know?
That's bigger now at, what is it, 8 a.m. than they were. I think the post office called at noon. We probably had them in their brooder by 1 o'clock yesterday.
Yeah.
They're bigger now.
Yeah.
They're notably bigger.
You got 25 plus a couple extras?
Yeah, 26, one extra.
Yeah. Yeah, I lost, I think I ordered 12. I think they sent me like 14 or something like that. And I lost three of them. I ended up doing 10. So I think I lost three of them. I had to, there was just a couple that were doing like having like failure to thrive or whatever that I had to, it was a bummer, man. I would like wake up early to go to work and I'd have to go, kill a couple chickens, like kill a little baby chick before I left for work. Kind of bummed me out.
Yeah. Yeah, we almost lost one already. It got trapped down in little spot. I have like a little thing to set food and water on. And it got trapped behind there. And when Lanny came down yesterday evening, right after dinner. She said it was in there. It was cold. It had no heartbeat, but she just kind of held it and breathed some life into it. And a few minutes later, it was cheeping again.
That's good to hear.
And this morning, last night, and then again this morning, I looked under the brooder plate. Nobody's looking sickly. So it fully recovered, it seems.
Yeah. You gave it a little bit of chicken mouth to mouth, maybe.
Yeah, just a little. A little. Good morning, Deborah.
Deborah, you've made it.
Good morning. Comcast, I tell you. They messed me up big time.
What happened?
Well, the internet just went out yesterday. I had told you that. And then it came back on, and then it went out again, and then came back on. And I needed to log into my email. And of course, I never log into my email, so I don't know what my password was. So that was a whole couple hours of nightmare until
your Comcast email.
Yeah. Eric said, why don't you just go log in on the Comcast website and change your password? Oh, that worked. But then when I went on to Zoom, because everything had been shut down, I needed to log into Zoom, which I don't usually need to do. And it wouldn't accept that number. Anyhow, all's well now.
You're here.
I'm here.
Guys, we've had some donations over the past few weeks that we haven't got to, so I guess we should get to them now. So, Chris Tropp, one of our longest sustaining donators. Thank you so much, Chris. Robert Holm, Nathan May. Thank you, guys. You guys are all associate producers for this episode. We had a couple executive producers. So those are the bigger donations, you guys. One of our oldest friends, not old in age, but old as in sustaining communications with Rebecca and Sincula and Brian Hartman. You guys are the executive producers of this show. So awesome. Yeah, I've been talking with Rebecca Ann, and she is in the wind. She got a camper van or something like that set up, and she's been traveling up and down the Oregon coast and Northern California. And I think she said she's going to be in Astoria soon, so she may come camp out on our land.
Awesome. Oh, that's cool. That's so great.
Yeah.
I hope she does.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, thank you guys for the donations. Every little bit helps out. And I was able to send, did Lanny tell you I sent you some money, or did she just keep it for herself?
She just keeps it for herself.
Okay. Well, I guess that's the way
it works.
Yeah. I don't have money anymore either.
Yeah. What's yours is hers, and what's hers is hers.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we had a Deborah Gets Red Pilled fan come hang out at our place this last week. That was pretty cool.
What were you doing? What was going on at your place?
Nothing. He just came to visit. His name's Max. I think he doesn't live far from here.
Is he in Spokane or in Bellingham?
No, closer to Bellingham.
Okay.
He's even closer to the border than we are.
Yeah.
And he got a hold. I think he got a hold of you first, and you forwarded something to me. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
We emailed a couple times. He's ended up being involved with what I loosely refer to as our freedom cell. It's not a freedom cell, but our liberty-minded people that we hang out with a few times a month. He's come to a couple of those now. We're getting to know him. Oh, he was there for Alana Freeland.
Yeah.
Lanny invited him over. He came over. He brought us some fermented asparagus that he did, which was phenomenal. He just hung out and, you know, spent a few hours, worked with Lanny in the kitchen for a little while, spent some time with me outside. It was very nice.
That's great. Cool. Yeah. Really, you know, cool. You know what was cool that happened to me yesterday? After our big episode with Buck Johnson, which I loved, I thought that was a fantastic episode. A lot of people really liked it.
Excellent.
And even a lot of people I know that are kind of on that same path have messaged me and told me that, you know, they've already taken the next step that I haven't yet. And they said that was a great, great episode. Buck has a friend who he said I would probably get along with. We have the same interests and stuff, in Portland. And that guy called me on the phone. We talked for like 20 minutes. Awesome. And I think we're going to go meet for a Saturday night service in Vancouver, Washington Saturday night. So
cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Are you guys going to hit up that Arby's in Vancouver?
Oh, the Mill Plain Arby's to meet with Stephen.
Yeah. Stephen sounds pretty cool, dude.
Yeah. Stephen sounds like a cool dude. Why are they, Deborah, did you hear about Stephen from the Mill Plain Arby's?
No.
Well, the FBI, I think, was investigating this young man, Stephen, I forget his last name, for some child pornography. And while going through his computer, they also found a video. He was the night shift manager at the local Mill Plain location. Mill Plain is a big busy road that runs through Vancouver, Washington, suburb of Portland, kind of a suburb. It's actually a bigger city of 20 minutes from Portland. And they found video of him urinating in the milkshake mix bag at Arby's. Then they went back and they found that 30 people had ordered milkshakes. I've never had a milkshake from Arby's. 30 people the next day had ordered milkshakes and one root beer float. And they also found, you know, they find child porn, and then they also find that he is a member of Portland Antifa. They're all pedophiles. It's so wild. They're all child molesters or watch CP. It's so crazy.
Out of this world, man.
Yeah. So,
well, when I was growing up, the story was that somebody knew somebody who knew somebody who worked at the Kentucky Fried who peed in the batter.
Yeah. There's also the story of like a rat, people eating rats at Kentucky Fried Chicken that get like mixed in with your bucket. But yeah, but it just makes so much of a more of a difference when they end up being like,
yeah,
belonging to being a member of the group that you hate the most. Like they're all pedophiles. They all beat their wives. Like, I mean, anything, like all these people that get arrested in Portland all have our child molesters at some point in their life. That guy Kyle Rittenhouse shot was out of prison for raping 5-year-old boys. The other guy he shot like beats his wife. Like, what's going on, Deborah?
And this is a group of people who are trying to force in quotes morals upon people about certain issues. It's mind
just blowing. I'm there. What is wrong? Something big.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no big fan of like the Proud Boys, but at least you're not hearing about them being like pedophiles on a massive scale, you know.
Just wait. Everybody we think is.
Well, you kind of find out why so many people on the left maybe are pushing for, you know, it to be an accepted sexual orientation, you know, and that's coming, Deborah. It's already here. It's just. Well,
is it Lambda?
Oh, NAMBLA.
NAMBLA.
NAMBLA's been around forever, but then they're calling, I mean, that's always been a joke, but you it's a real thing, you know.
I've seen a documentary. It's old. It's from the 90s.
Yeah.
It's called Chicken Hawk. It's got like a subtitle.
Oh yeah, that. I remember that. That's the term. Yeah.
And it was one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen. Partly, and mind you, I watched this a long, long time ago. I watched it, and partway through, there were moments where I started to like feel bad for some of these pedophiles, like just briefly, you know, like I'd catch myself and cause they would.
Chud's frozen up. Can you see him, Deborah?
Yeah, he's frozen.
Be putting such a sob story of it where they're going to. Oh, my back.
Yeah, you're back. Me? Yeah, yeah.
Okay. See, I started talking about this. It gets unstable. Yeah. But there's like a part where they're like trying to participate in a gay pride parade, and they're being thrown out of the gay pride parade. They're showing the guy sitting at home getting just message after message on his answering machine of people saying they're going to kill him for being a pedophile and all this kind of stuff. And there's these moments where like, it's like, oh man, this guy, he can't do anything in life. Like he's being shut out from every angle. Wait a second. Yeah,
he should be,
because he's a fucking pedophile. Like this is that's good. He's being treated poorly because he does really fucked up shit. But it's like it would do this sort of number on my head. I don't think it would anymore because I'm so much more awake than I was at the time. Like, I don't know. I'm revisiting that film. I don't want to, but I almost do just to see, was that happening because the slant of the movie was to glorify the pedophiles? I mean, it was, seemed at the time that it was anti-pedophile. But maybe if I re-examined it today, I wouldn't see it the same.
Maybe they were, you know, they had filmed it so it would seem, it would make people feel sympathetic.
There's this other one that I've seen that I couldn't get more than like 10 minutes into it. And it's like about this whole like trailer park in Florida that's all sex, people who've been convicted of sex crimes, you know,
sex offender park kind of
thing. It's a sex offender park, and most of them are pedos. Yeah, it's pretty messed up. But Deborah, have you heard the term MAPS?
No.
That's what's going. That's the next thing that's going to get added to LGBTQIA+. They're going to add M.
And
MAPS is minor attracted persons.
Ew.
And there's, you know, libs of TikTok have videos of college professors with green hair and pear bodies and thick rim glasses talking about how it needs to be a protected class. And it's coming, you know. That's they want your kids. There's no joke about it. I will hope our guest shows up today, because we're really going to get into the thing about them wanting your kids. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if soon they take off the G out of LGBTQIA+, because they don't even like gay guys anymore.
Especially not white privileged ones.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, oh, you already got what you were fighting for. You got marriage, you know. Mm-hmm. They'll keep the lesbian on there, even though they have the exact same thing. But, you know, on No Agenda, they always talk about how it used to be GLB. And the lesbians got first billing somehow. They got it all switched around.
Because that matters.
It matters to them. So, yeah. But, hey, Deborah, have you fermented anything yet?
God, I've been dreading this question. No, I have not, but I am going to.
Why? Just because you think your little chicken forearms aren't tough enough to squeeze the cabbage?
You mean my little chicken forearms?
Chicken forearms.
Oh, chicken forearms. Did you hear farms also? No, I'll squeeze the cabbage.
Yeah. I did some sauerkraut, and I let it go for what I thought was way too long. I did it on the first time Lanny did the seminar. I went and did it right afterwards, and I was supposed to take it off the shelf. I think I'd write the date of when I did it and the date of when I'm supposed to be done with it on it, put it on a little piece of tape and put it on the jars, you know. And I was supposed to take it off, like right, take the sauerkraut down off the shelf and put it in the fridge, stop fermentation right when we went to Puerto Rico. And then I left it out, and then I let it go like another week, just cause I was like going to be bummed that it was going to be bad. And I took it down. It's perfect. I let it go like 3 extra weeks just because it's cold here.
Yeah.
And man, I'd made some of the best kombucha I've ever done in my life.
Sweet.
Yeah. Like I said, I put it up on, on Instagram. If anyone local wants a SCOBY, I've got about 100 of them. So hit me up and we can work something out. They're $5. And they're in the lineage of the Derek Bros SCOBY that I got in at the Sasquatch, the first annual Sasquatch Freedom Festival.
Excellent.
So yeah, Emily took one to her friend today and I've given a few out. Nate from Reality Czars wants one, but man, I made some, I made beet, apple, carrot, ginger juice and used that for the juice. And it's fantastic. It's like a sweeter version of kvass. It's like a more complex kvass.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
Yeah. Lanny just made one with her June that, it's cherry and ginger.
Oh, wow. Ooh,
dude, it's sounds so good. And it's got just that right amount of pop of the carbonation. You know, it's like, just, it tastes so good going down. So good.
Hey guys, I didn't think he was going to show up. Our guest here. Let's pause, let him in, and let's get back to business.
Okay,
guys, we're back, and we are here with an extra special guest this week. Sean McCann from Wake the Dead podcast is here, and we're really happy to have you here, man. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, you've been on my radar for a while. I mean, I think I first heard you with Occult Rejects talking about television programming, and those dives were fantastic and really good. And then I got into your show, and then you started popping up with one of my favorite researchers and podcasters, William Ramsey.
Yeah.
And you William's guys great. Start.
I'm so glad to be acquainted with him, be his friend. It's fantastic. It's great. I've been his listener for a long time.
Yeah, me too. I wish he wouldn't drop so many podcasts all at once on my, it's on tough my to podcast keep up. Feed.
Yeah. Can you imagine? He reads, like, he must read a million books a day because all these authors, like, he's read all these books. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. And he's been on our show and to talk about Order of Nine Angles and stuff like that he does for everybody.
Yeah. And he was on my show with that.
And I asked him how he does it. And he's just like, oh, I've got a Kindle. So I just read all day. And
That's all great.
That's and great. Then the cool
I've
thing
got
about
one that's loaded up, but I haven't had time. I'm always like,
yeah,
that's great for him. I'm so,
but, glad. You guys have been doing, deep dives on films, occult films. You did, The Ninth Gate, which is, for some reason, it's a movie that's been on my radar for a long time. I remember seeing it on like AMC or something like that way back in the day.
Right.
And it's an entertaining, good movie. And I didn't even know anything about what you guys were talking about with it when I watched it. And then Eyes Wide Shut, of course, which we were originally going to do with you today, but we're not. And then the recent Rosemary's Baby two-part was really good. Like,
awesome.
That's messed up. But I was telling I was telling Chud that I can't believe that movie was made in the 60s. You know, it's a screwed up movie.
Yeah, and it goes to show like how, I mean, that's one of the ones that survives that people still watch. I mean, there were a lot of occult satanic movies in the 60s.
Yeah.
They were just unfolding it onto society, you know.
But
Christopher Lee, like The Wicker Man, like all these. The Eye of the Devil, like, you know, to the Devil a Daughter, that's another one. They're very I guess they're cult classics now, but at the time, you know, this was commonplace in the theaters, you know. So it was like,
you know,
putting it in the zeitgeist of people's minds.
It goes really far back to, I just this week watched what was probably the first occult film of Nosferatu.
Oh yeah,
from 1922, and that thing is just packed with symbolism and crazy stuff.
Yeah,
it's wild.
It's, I mean, it's great photography too. They're really, really good composition. And if you really like that, you should see a movie with Willem Dafoe plays Max Schreck, the guy that was the actor in that film. forget what
I've seen that movie.
And I can't think of the name of it.
Vampire, something about something of the vampire. Yeah, Shadow of the Vampire. Ooh. It's really good.
Very good.
Willem Dafoe's great. Yeah. He's great.
And Max Schreck is so freaky. So freaky in that movie. And it's so amazing that it's so old. My jaw was open the whole time. I'd seen it before, but it had been a while. And I was just blown away.
Yeah. And it only makes sense that the cult movie started from the beginning because the people that started Hollywood are occultists, you know, and everybody knows like the word itself, Hollywood that's the kind of wood that magicians would use for a wand. And it's like, they actually ran to Hollywood to start a new business because they had it started in New York. And everybody that had patents on the projectors and that type of thing were they had a stronghold of that area. And the Jews had to go to Hollywood and create their whole, an entire new like center for the mind controlled productions. And, you know, before in New York, it started as like they were Nickelodeons. They would show pictures of nude ladies, you know, somebody would put a nickel in and you'd go into a booth and like the screen would go up for a few minutes and, mm-hmm. you know, you do what you do. And
it's so early, crazy early that word, show. That word Nickelodeon became, I don't know the stats, but the most successful.
Not very crazy when you understand really what's going on with that whole, that entire. Like how the reason that they make TV shows like that have all those extras of young kids, it's so that they can cycle them through and have many victims over and over again because it's produced by pedophiles.
Dan Snyder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ricky from what's it called? Better Off Dead. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
The fat guy that snorts jello.
Yeah, that was all creepy and creeping on the French girl. Yeah,
that's Dan Snyder, and he's the one that went. I don't know if he was running Nickelodeon or if he was just like he's supposed to be the father of Britney Spears's sister's baby.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Dan Snyder, look up.
I'm sure that wasn't consensual.
No. Dan Snyder, I don't know if he was just he ran shows or if he ran the whole channel, but yeah, he played Ricky, the fat guy who snorts jello in Better Off Dead.
I remember Ricky's mom.
Just like when she's talking about French fries. French
bread. that was his mom. And he was like, he was covered in diesel fuel, like trying to burn himself.
Great movie.
One of the classics. Yeah,
but we are not here to have fun and talk about great 80s comedy flicks. Deborah, we're going to throw a wrench in the gears. I know I told you to do some research on Eyes Wide Shut. We're going to save that for a later date with Sean.
All right.
Because earlier this week, I listened to his two-part deep dive into someone who you have probably quoted as being one of your heroes, perhaps. I don't know if that's true, but I know a lot of people like you that would probably say that, and that, you know, is just the most benevolent, best person ever, when in true reality, they are one of the biggest monsters of the 20th century. And that's saying a lot, because from what we know from doing this show, we're going to talk about Margaret Sanger.
Oh, okay.
Deborah, can you just kind of get into... We know, like, Hillary Clinton has said that she's like her greatest hero, I believe. And I think she was forced to recant that statement recently because I don't know if she was forced to recant it, but I think from what's come to light, she no longer says that. But yeah. Deborah, what has been your, just kind of understanding of who Margaret Sanger was, what she did, what Planned Parenthood did for the world and all that?
Well, I was not a fan of hers. I, you know, just never really got attracted to that, but.
You're just indifferent, or you disliked her?
Indifferent, because I thought, okay, Planned Parenthood, that's a good thing, you know, but later on, far into my adulthood. I mean, in the last few years, I learned a little bit more about her and her, you know, reasons for starting Planned Parenthood and eugenics. And so, yeah, I had what it, my neutral feeling was no longer neutral.
Yeah. How do you feel about Planned Parenthood?
Well, I think they provide a service, but I, you know, I have not done any research to look into whether or not, you know, they're still, I haven't done any of that research. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I used their services when I was a kid.
Yeah. I think a lot of teenage women do without their parents' consent. And
well, I mean, not, it's not always an abortion, like
right.
Like I,
right.
I've used their services. I went and had STD testing before when I was younger. You know, they do a few other things.
Yeah, yeah.
So provided, it's not like, I mean, we're not assuming pills. That you did that, right?
Yeah, okay. I got my pills.
Does anybody know off their head what percentage is abortion versus all other services?
Oh, it's huge. I'm not sure exactly, but it's mostly like, I'm guessing 80%, 90 maybe.
Yeah. And then if you added birth control into that, it's probably almost 100%, even though they will give you the old swab test, but
yeah. And Obama like made it so that health insurance pays for birth control and the state pays for birth control too. And I think the new one, Biden, Brandon or whatever, he made it so that they'll pay for abortions too. So that's, but I mean, she said the word right there. She said eugenics, and that's what it is. So you did kind of do enough research to know, like, you can identify it. So it's good that you're not a fan because... really it's about killing people and the controllers of this world. We know I'm sure from your other red pill deep dives that they want to cull the population of the earth. There's too many of us. They don't need us and we're useless eaters, as Kissinger says. So this Margaret Sanger was an integral part in the current culling that's happening today. Before Margaret Sanger, it was unheard of to even mention abortion. It's like so uncouth, like to kill a baby. I mean, really what it is, it's she helped to change the mores of the society. And she herself was not mentally fit. She had much abuse as a child, and I suspect from reading from what she's endured that she was a satanic ritual abuse victim, which makes sense because those are the pawns that they use in their game. You know, she's totally controlled, and she was raped and tortured as a child. She was put in a coffin with her dead sibling and raped. And so like by her dad. And so this changed her brain. And when she had her own kids, she didn't take care of them. She didn't see them. She would go off and do things and, you know, write letters home. Yeah, I'll be home soon. And then not come home for years.
And she'd be in like a different country. And
yeah.
Yeah. Somehow she had some power over her children's. Did she have multiple fathers of her children or just
one? She was very promiscuous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somehow she was able to control these guys and just get them to take care of her kids while she would be off gallivanting around in the world. What was the time frame when she first emerged? What when was it in the 20th century?
I believe it was the 30s when she was getting popular.
And she's American?
She's Irish. I think her parents are from Ireland. And no, she was born in Ireland and came over as a young child.
That's wild because I don't know how it is nowadays, but I know if it's legal there now, it's only been legal there for like a few years.
They just legalized it. It was illegal for the longest time because the Pope says it's bad. You know, it's they're Roman Catholic. And recently it was like 2016 or something. They just legalized it and they had parades in the streets, people crying. Yay. It's the mind control is thick. It's really bad.
Right. And it's crazy. So there's that weird part that she's Irish and that there. Did you see how the Archbishop of San Francisco was denying Nancy Pelosi communion? Oh,
I did hear that. Yes, because she endorses abortion.
Yeah,
she says it's her mission to, and a lot of the the Catholics are still on board with no abortion.
You know,
I'm sure this new Pope, the Jesuit, whatever the guy who replaced Ratzinger, that papal coup, I guess, or whatever happened. It's the weirdest thing. But that guy is this progressive socialist that wants to put us all in a new world order, you know.
Yeah.
And the guy before Ratzinger, Pope Paul II, was, he was against prophylactics and he was against abortion. Like it was a pretty hard stance. I mean, because they want to have more people. Like,
yeah,
the more Catholics in the world, the more they control the world. So that's like how they do it.
Yeah, but isn't there a deal where Jesuits aren't supposed to be the Pope?
Yeah, but I don't know exactly how they made that work. I mean, I'm not an expert in the papal hierarchical rules.
Yeah, but it's just it's funny because Pelosi describes herself as a devout Catholic.
Yeah,
she has that belief, which is
right.
Like one of the main. And same with Brandon. Brandon says he's a devout Catholic. Right. You know.
Yeah. So. Well, Jimmy Savile was a devout Catholic.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
He went to mass every day.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff every day, but
that's right.
Okay, so she emerges in the 30s in America. And then, so what is the first goal of Planned Parenthood with her?
Well, she had to get people's attention. So she would get arrested and she would do these stunts and she would be, she would catch people's attention and she would be flamboyant with her rhetoric. And it was abrasive to society. They're like, oh, what the, it really didn't jive too well, but she kept at it. And then she was funded by Rockefeller and she was brought to, and there were other Margaret Sangers in other countries too. It's like a worldwide thing.
The early days, is she promoting abortion, birth control, like contraception, or just the sterilization and eugenics?
I think in the beginning it was the pill, and I forget when that was invented.
Deborah, when was the pill invented?
I don't know.
Right. Well, anyway, she promoted the pill. Sorry, I don't have my notes here, but it started with contraception, and then she learned or became disillusioned with that and says we need to go further with this. And and there were many sterilization laws in the 30s in the United States. Feeble-mindedness was a term that they could just slap on somebody and then take them off the street, castrate them or give them a hysterectomy and send them back out in the world. Like there were people would go in to see the doctor for getting their tonsils out and they would have a hysterectomy and they'd be like, what, huh? When they wake up. And the doctors, like, they're allowed to do that because of the law. They had classifications of like how, you know, the how people that are valuable to society, you know, and the less smart you are, or the more bestial your lineage, your bloodlines are, they want to kill you off because they want to clean up the race, you know, and clean up that they want to kill the weed races, as Margaret Sanger would say. And so this is, it's to eugenics, that in their opinion, it's like beneficial to the genics, you know, genetics, like, but really it's a, it, what they've done in the end is dysgenics, because they have abused the people that are living and that keep living so hard that they have devolved into this mongoloid type unthinking beast of a people. Like, I mean, some people are really, it's like, you just shake your head. How did that happen? You know? And, but that's what they're doing really is there. It's H.G. Wells talks about in Time Machine, how they made two races. It like evolved into the Morlock and the Eloi, and the Eloi are like beautiful white skinned, and, you know, they just sit around and think all day. And then the Morlocks are these monsters that are pushed down below the ground. And that's basically what society, they're turning society into a bunch of Morlocks. And these owners are like, well, we're going to be overrun with these things. We need to start killing them off, you know? So, because they want to keep control of the world. And so anyway, that's why the injections are attacking the regenerative organs of the human and the heart. You know, they want to kill us, and they want to kill our babies. So like, it's like they've gone even farther than convincing mothers to kill their own kids. Now they're just shooting people up without even giving them notice. But I guess that's a different story. We'll talk about Margaret Sanger. Yeah. So yeah. Where were we? We were in the 30s, and she, yeah. Okay. She started with contraception and she decided that it needed to go further. Yeah.
So originally what is her connection to the original, or not original group, but the group of eugenicists who had seen in the early 19th or early 20th century?
She was funded by them. She worked with them.
And that's Rockefeller's and...
Yeah, Rockefeller funded them too. Yeah. And it's the same type of people that were funding Darwin before. You know, Darwin was being funded by Huxley, you know, T.H. Huxley. And then Huxley taught H.G. Wells, and H.G. Wells taught Julian and Aldous Huxley. You know, it's like a similar, it's like a one line of thought that goes through. So these same people are, have been in the works trying to devolve, like there was like, frenetics. They would think that they came up with the science of like being able to tell physically that this person is feeble-minded by like the bumps on their head. You know, they would just, it was arbitrary, and they would just, or like the shape of their nose or whatever. And the Nazis kind of went really far with that. And, you know, we see that in the way that they selected for the blue eye and the blonde hair and all that.
Well, didn't the Nazis take notes from American eugenicists?
Yes. Yeah, they loved the laws that we had, and they wanted to implement that over there. Yeah, but they went a next step further even then, like to kill the living person instead of killing their generational, you know, progeny. It's like they keep ratcheting it back, and now, like, I mean, I guess abortion really is killing the person before they're even born. Like, it's even. It's really sick. And if you know like what types of abortions are allowed in some states, you will be horrified, because Like, you can't have a scale of like, oh, after 20 weeks, now it's a person, you know?
Yeah.
That's moral relativism at its core. Like, really, it is a person since conception. Once it starts to divide and multiply the cells, then it is, it's doing its own thing. It is alive and it has its own consciousness.
Yeah. You get into that whole, there's the magical line of like, when is and when is not a baby born, you know, or a person, when do they become a person?
Right.
You know, there are situations where doctors convince people that they should have a C-section, you know, weeks and weeks early, and it comes out and that's a baby. That's a person.
Right.
Were they not a person before that? Are they a person when they take their first breath? You know, I mean, and then like Ralph Northam, you know, who says, even though they're breathing, we're going to take them over. We're going to make them comfortable while we have our discussion as to what to do next.
Make them comfortable.
Have you, Deborah, we've talked about that one before. Do you remember Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia, Governor Blackface? Well, I can't call him Governor Blackface. He might have been the guy in the Klan outfit. We don't
either know. Blackface or Klan.
Do you remember when he said that?
No.
He said that he's talking about aborting children who are born.
He says, make them comfortable. Make them comfortable while with we drugs. Discuss with the mother what the next step is. And this, you know, is still being classified as abortion.
And we've, and you know, seen what that discussion is?
I don't understand.
It's coercion. You should kill it. You should kill it. And mom's like, oh,
what don't guess. You understand, Deborah? We've talked about this before on the show, and when it came out, when he said this.
A child that is delivered and is in its little bassinet or whatever.
Right.
And the doctor is refers to it as
in other words, it says you're white trailer
taking
trash.
The child's life.
You already have four kids. This baby's born.
Everybody's frozen.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Uh-oh.
Oh, she's frozen.
We can hear you, but you're frozen.
We can hear you though. So keep talking, I guess.
Her internet's been having trouble.
Oh no.
I remember
get that fiber optic.
Yeah, I remember when Ralph Northam said that. I talked to her about it, and
that's huge.
It's
it was over
so
the top.
Crazy.
The
like
partial birth abortion is enough.
Like, they were saying it out loud. What people on the other side said, well, they want to do this, and everyone would go, dude, you're fucking crazy. They're not really talking about like living babies. I know you have certain stories.
They're all living babies. It's so, I mean, the way that it's word magic, you know what I mean? Not living babies. Oh yeah.
Blah, blah. Right. You right. Know. It was so silly. Where did Ralph say that? Was he on a podcast? I remember the clip. I remember seeing the clip.
I don't think he was on a news? Podcast. It was a press conference or something like that.
Yeah. The footage was everywhere. I'm sure it's still there. Although things like that do tend to go away.
Yeah, you got to download that stuff.
Well, I mean, have you guys seen the footage of that new one in those Senate hearings where they're talking about it? And they I don't even know who these people are, but it's some like young Asian girl who's testifying in front of Congress. You know, when they do all those like gotcha, gotcha
questions.
They
were talking about partial birth. I think that one was.
First of all, he's asking, it's the same girl that the guy's asking to define what a woman is, and she won't answer. And he says, men? So, and she says, I think people should be free to feel however they want. And he says, okay, well, do you think men can get pregnant and have abortions? And she says, yes. And then she says that under what she's proposing, that, you know, abortion would be allowed while the woman is dilating, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the birth process has started, and is that allowed? And she said, yes, that would be allowed.
Yeah.
That's it. Shouldn't expand on it, but yeah. So that, and how they do that is they make the feet go out first. Because by law, if the head is still in the mother, it's not born yet. So they get the feet out first, and this is how they harvest the organs really good, when they want the muscle tissue and they want, you know, they harvest the baby, you know. So anyway, they make it go feet first, and they keep the head in the mother. And at that moment, they stab, this is really gross, I'm sorry, cover your ears, everybody. They stab the back of the baby's head with scissors, and they scramble the brain. Snip. They just scramble it around.
I was thinking there was a spinal snip kind of thing.
Well, they could probably do that both. Too. Yeah. But I mean, from what I've learned, they stab and scramble.
And this and then, would all be and then it's dead that breath.
Before the yes, yeah, before the breath, before the head comes out.
Yeah.
Because like the vaginal, you know, it's kind of open because the head is like starting to escape into life. It's almost got, you know, it's almost there. And then nope. You know, the Satanists.
As someone who delivered my own son, that's I can
God bless you, man. Yeah, the next one, if we ever have another one, is going to be at home. Like,
yeah, that's what we did.
Yeah, good for you, man.
Yeah, if I hopefully when we get to do it, it'll be here.
That's great.
Yeah, it's that whole figuring out where the line is it's just it's not. You can't do it, and
it's by definition like, moral relativism.
I was born, which is evil. I'm a month premature, and I was perfectly healthy, like nothing, right? Nothing. I went out as a C-section because that's what they did in the 70s, right? You know, but
they saved you. Whatever was wrong, they saved you.
There was nothing wrong with me when I came. Why did it?
Oh well. Yeah. For some
this
reason,
happened to a former coworker of mine. Their first child. I can't remember what it was. They said that your baby's going to die inside. Yeah, we have to get it out. We have to do it now. And it was it was like 7 weeks early. I mean, real early.
It's like the doctor had a tea time. He had
golf. Oh, they do that
too. He had golf on the day that the baby was supposed to be born naturally. Yeah.
they do that. They wait. They like schedule it sometimes to make it easier on everybody, so the mom doesn't have to have all that labor and so the doctor can be on the course, but they schedule it for the normal time it's supposed to be born, you know. If you know about the way they traumatize babies, it makes sense that they would take the baby out early because it's trauma to babies. That's if you read Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, like the first chapter, it talks about how they abuse fetuses and children to create the adult that they desire.
Oh, so man.
They have like a stratified, just like, you know, they got alphas, betas, like that. And they train the gammas to pick up trash. And like they train the betas, oh, at least I'm not at a gamma, you know, and oh, I'm glad I'm not an alpha. They have to think about stuff, and I get to just have fun, you know. They get these like programs, like he would like integrate like Ewan Cameron type psychic driving type things into the fiction book, you know. And these are real processes that MK Ultra was studying, and you know, Aldous Huxley and Julian Huxley were intimately connected with that. And so it was kind of like a revelation of the method, that book. And that's what I see is happening now when they inject the children with poisons and they circumcise the babies and they give ultrasound, a bunch of ultrasound. And they, you know, they make the birth experience traumatic for the mother and the baby. They use drugs on the mother that intercept the natural drugs, like they give Pitocin, so that the natural oxytocin doesn't occur. Yeah. And then the bonding between the mother and the baby is interrupted. They're very satanic.
They cut the cord way too early. Too instead early. Of letting it drain it back in. That
was my first child. He was born in a hospital. Mm. And my wife said, no drugs, no drugs, no drugs.
God bless her.
The doctor convinced her in the last hour.
And when you're in that kind of pain, you take whatever.
And really, she didn't do this literally, but she was tapping her watch going, come on, you got to have some Pitocin. I got a family of my own. I got to get out of here.
Wow.
And they did. And it happened. And as it happened, I mean, within within minutes of him being born, my wife asked to see the placenta. They said, oh no, it's gone.
They steal that.
The umbilical cord was cut, like, you know, cause like I kind of wanted to cut it, you know, like those things you hear about or see on TV, all that kind of crap. It was such a world of difference between that and a home birth 8 years later,
in control and you love the baby. For them, it's just another number. And they're just like,
the first one was a business deal almost. it was a beautiful moment in its own way. But then fast forward to a home birth where it was just the two of us plus a doula.
Right.
And it was a spiritual event that like all of us were very in the moment, and it was so beautiful. And the other one, having a beautiful baby son, was beautiful, but there was this, I don't know. There were people who were trying to get out onto the course, get on home a golf course and get the F out of here. You know, like it was, and there were janitors just taking care of stuff. I mean, in one sense, someone could say, well, that's the modern convenience of being able to have a baby in a sterile hospital. You have no cleanup. I didn't see it that way.
No.
And I really don't see it that way now.
Right. Yeah. Now that you've learned, and we can always make better choices. It's great that you've made the better choice for your second child. And, you know, God bless you.
Everything I've heard about people having children in the hospital nowadays is terrifying. It sounds so scary. And like they sequester you away. And like, if you refuse the medicine that they want you to put in your brand new baby, they keep sending different people in over and over and over to try to beat you down.
That happened to us.
To try to do it. And like, I heard on No Agenda, they were talking about this woman who tested positive for the problem with the air right after she'd had her baby. And they took the baby.
Quarantined
it for 10 days.
Did they put her behind plastic? Did they put a plastic barrier across her belly so that she can't even breathe?
I don't know about that, but I know
I've seen that online. I see that. I've seen that happen. Yeah. Where they're like, they put a mask on the mother.
Yeah.
And they got her like doing the heavy breathing in that mask. I mean, that's a crime right there.
Yeah.
And then they put this plastic barrier like across her belly so that
like a plexiglass at the grocery store.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like a clear trash bag kind of, and you know, and then they take the baby and they just take him away. And what happens? Yeah. Do they circumcise him? Do they take his blood?
Do
they torture him or switch him? Who knew? Who even knows? Mother is in no control at all. It must be the most scary situation for any mother going through that. I don't wish that on anybody. Oh.
Yeah,
that's a hell.
Chud and his wife Lanny do a really good podcast together called The World As It Is Today, and they're home birth proponents, and they talk a lot about all this stuff. So yeah, if you guys are interested in that, go listen to
The World As It Is Today. I'm writing that down.
Yeah, and it's I don't remember in the 90s when Bill Clinton's thing was safe, legal, rare. That's what he would say.
What was that pertaining to?
Abortion.
Oh, what's rare about it?
Well, it was ideally, it would be rare. Deborah, you're back. Welcome back. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. I apologize.
No need to apologize. Everybody
has good. You missed some really gross talk, so it's good. We talked about how they do it.
Deborah, do you remember in the 90s, Bill Clinton's talking point on abortion was, his saying was safe, legal, rare. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, that's what he would always say, and that kind of got
that was the propaganda push.
Yeah, that's what, but I've heard people say it now. But if there is no moral component to any of that, if it's just a clump of cells, if there's no life in there, why does it need to be rare? You know, why?
Well, they're changing that. They're churning and burning them now. The government pays for it, you know?
Okay, Deborah.
I don't know because I'm not familiar. I don't recall that that quote, but was he referring to, you know, for health reasons or victims of rape? I don't know.
No. And they'll never say that. And that, well, they do say that all the time, but they'll never say, oh, they'll always say, what about in cases of incest or rape or an ectopic pregnancy? And then if you say, well, is that the only time that you advocate for it? They'll say no, you know.
Of course not. Yeah. That's the camel's nose under the tent. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
just that's how they get it in.
The little tiptoes
they,
in.
They used to get me with that one of that. I'd say, well, you know, I think I'm, because I at one point I was pro-abortion to whatever degree when I was younger. And then I started rethinking things. And when I would have discussions, particularly out loud at bars when I used to drink, you know, I would, people would say, well, what about this? And what about that for rape, incest situations like that? And be like, yeah, okay. You know, I'm not saying that it should be illegal because there are, you know, like I'd feel that I had to succumb to this argument. Yeah. And I realized that was a trap.
If you're a real anarchist, killing shouldn't be illegal. You know, if you have a righteous reason to do so and you have been wronged and they took your rights, like, so if basically it really isn't, I mean, like you can do anything, really. The law is just a mind control system. Like, we really do live in anarchy right now. Like, you can kill your neighbor, you can kill your kid, you know, you'll have to deal with the karmic consequences. You know, it's probably a very hellish outcome, but still, like, that is all possible. And if a mother wants to kill, she should be able to do that. I know it's, I mean, but I'm like, I'm a principled anarchist. I think all drugs should be legal. I think people should be able to, you know, have the ability to do something. But they're also going to be subjected to the karmic repercussions. And, you know, if you murder somebody, you're going to get murdered yourself, probably by the family of those who you did that to.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's that old saying of, just because you can pull the trigger doesn't mean you should. The repercussions, right, even in a quote unquote lawless society, could be, well, you shot Bill. Well, Bill was an upstanding member of the community, and the community is not going to appreciate that.
Right.
But if you did shoot the local child molester that everyone was trying to get rid of in the first place, well, exactly, you might not be facing the same consequences for pulling that trigger.
Right. Because now, you get into the defensive realm of a baby, thing. Because you're defending children.
Yes.
The difference. There's a morality. Yeah.
Now take it into the realm of baby, unborn baby. What are you defending? I mean, I think the argument, I don't think anyone thinks about it like this on that side, but I think the argument would be, well, that baby's infringing upon my right to party. you know, they're infringing upon my right to live my life as I want to, and that would change my life, and I don't want that. Well, that's, I don't know, that doesn't last. That's not a very good argument.
Well, when your parents ground you, you can't just kill your parents. Like, oh, no, they're infringing on my right to party.
Yeah,
it's right. Like they blast Beastie Boys real loud and
abort your parents.
I'm obviously, I missed a big portion, and
we were so mostly just talking. Where about are you thinking?
Where are you? Where are you thinking right now?
Because
we'll bring you along. We'll get you.
Okay, I think women should have the choice.
Right. Me too. Yeah. And but I think it's wrong, but that's different than having the choice. Like there's, you know, and that's like when you, okay, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. I apologize.
No. That's okay. I mean, I'm here to learn from you. I mean, there are some awful situations that women find themselves in that is no fault of their own. And I don't agree that they should have, you know, give birth to a child of rape or incest, or if it is going to affect the health of the mother, or, you know.
Let's do a little exercise here, Deborah. I don't know if I believe this either. And I think, I don't know. I'm still trying to form my, you know, thoughts on this.
It's great.
But lots of children have really terrible, shitty fathers.
Yeah.
Should you kill those kids?
No, of course not.
I would have been killed, I guess. Yeah.
Kill the fathers.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, it comes back to the principles of, like, what do you have the right to do? Like, you have the right to control your own body.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that is another body growing inside of you. And you have to give consent to let it happen, you know. But it's not your body, and you can't really choose to dispose of that thing, you know, in all honesty. It's its own consciousness. It's experiencing just like we do. And, you know, it's wrong. It's against moral laws of nature to take the life of something that has a soul, you know.
And I guess I'm also kind of hung up on, I don't know, you know, I think this term is wrong to use on a human, but when it becomes viable. How do you decide when?
I don't know if it's viable until it's like a teenager and can pay its bills.
It's not viable until it pays taxes.
Then I'm using, but I mean,
what would be okay? So Deborah, we're just doing philosophical exercises here, and there's no judgment. I think all of us have sort of come to some sort of thought on the subject, but are still not 100%. I mean, for me at least, I can't, you know, I don't know what I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pro-life, and that's the whole thing too. Like, the differences in words have meaning. I am pro-life, and that's considered a bad thing now to say. Pro-life.
Yeah, but it's bad to say all lives matter too.
Yeah, it was apparently an integral step in my changing of my mind on these things. A long, long, long time ago, I was still a drunk in a bar, and I just made the change. If I started saying I was pro-abortion instead of pro-choice. Like, I just thought that made more sense to me, and that made my friends slam me really hard, which maybe helped push me down the road. Right. But just that change in the word, which is just as accurate, actually way more accurate than pro-choice. Cause I'm also pro-choice. I'm pro-choice on everything always.
Great.
But beautiful. Pro-abortion versus pro-choice.
That's very important, because they control the language so that you don't recognize the truth of it. That's how they occult the truth. They say, I mean, George Carlin had a stand-up about that, talking about euphemisms, how they euphemize the words. In the beginning, it was shell shock, and now it's like post-traumatic stress disorder, and put hyphens in it. And it takes the edge off the word. It takes like the meaning out of it. And then they throw that kind of thing around, and you don't really get the reality. So choice is great, you know, yay, let's have a choice. But really what the choice is killing something. So like, when you say pro-abortion, that's even another step removed from pro-killing and pro-murder, actually, because it's violating the kid. The kid didn't do anything wrong to you, you know, it's violence, you know, you're taking the rights away from somebody else. So really if you want to be honest, you'd say, I'm pro murder. And then they'd say, oh, what do you mean? Well, in this certain case, I'm pro murder. And then,
the way that it's being explained away and that it's being rationalized is that the further you push it out and say that it's not a human, is how far away you take the morality out of it. And it's not. Deborah, I want to just do this exercise with you. Where do you draw the line? Where do you say no more? where do you say it's a baby? Where do you say you can do it, you can't do it?
Where do I personally draw the line?
Yes, you personally. No wrong answers. We're not going to judge you. We're having a discussion.
I think if it's a healthy situation and, it's just because mom's not ready or dad's not ready, I think that's morally wrong.
But you have to, if it's going to be safe, legal, and rare, we got to put a line. You got to say 3 months. You got to say 8 months. What are you going to say?
Well, you don't even show positive until, I don't know what.
Deborah, 12? What's your line?
I'm just going to arbitrarily say 3 months.
Okay. How about 3 months, one day?
Well, if you're setting a line, the line's the line.
Okay. Got it.
That's how they, so this is no fault of Deborah's. This is how they, and you, even the way that you posed the question, it enticed a moral relative answer. Mm-hmm. Like, so because this is how
it's a moral decision. And as much as they don't want you to think it is
right.
Morality to it.
Exactly. And the way that they have trained us with schooling and television and all of this mind control, they make us think in a moral relative sense. They train us over the years. This is how the world is. Like, that person's not allowed to break into your house with a gun, but that person is because he's got a badge. You know, that person is not a baby yet because it's, you know, still in the mom, and that one is. Like, so it's creating a line that is, they're making a gray scale of what is really black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, it's obscuring the truth and making the wrong choice more palatable.
Yeah. And what's happening is as soon as there's a line drawn, that line gets pushed and pushed and pushed until we get Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia, saying that babies should be able to be aborted post-birth. And then we have Deborah. It's not funny. It's real.
It's amazing. I
wish it was funny and not.
I laugh too, man. It's like, it's in your face, like, holy crap, like, oh wow.
And then, I mean, Deborah, have you seen that Asian girl that's been testifying in front of Congress, who says that it's a week old, who says that a baby should be able to be aborted while the mom's dilated?
God, no.
And they'll start out and they'll say ectopic or rape or incest or anything like that. And then it just gets pushed and pushed and pushed. And it starts like, it always starts like that. It starts with gay marriage. They say gay marriage is here. And that's great.
Love wins. Love.
And then
choice. Yay, choice.
The moral majority and conservative Christians are like, if this happens, they're coming for the kids.
Right.
And then they're coming for the kids. It's just as soon as you do it, it just gets pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed.
That's how they work, like the boiling frog, you know, that's how it goes. And as the generations continue, like in the 50s, it was morally repugnant to have gay sex or to have extramarital affairs. And there were laws against it, you know, and then a disgusting sadist named Alfred Kinsey came along and was funded by Rockefeller, came to change the mores of society. And then they had the 60s thing, and then they had the pill, and like, everybody free love. And that way they change it. And then, so the next generation is changed, and then they, you know, they're in power in the 80s, and they're busy doing cocaine and looking at the stock market, and their kids are like, totally, and they get divorced and stuff, so like even further divided. So like the next generation is all divorced parents, and you know, like nobody cares about them because their parents are narcissistic and like doing their own life. And like, and then we get to be older and we don't know how to do life. And, you know, and our kids like, oh, we just put them in front of the TV. Oh, here, give it a smartphone. And, you know, like we don't even think.
We're getting the backlash from being raised by boomers, and everybody that's got teenage kids now is just a overbearing helicopter parent who won't let their kids leave the nest. And we end up in a situation like we are now with a whole bunch of, you know,
adult children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're
and the video games and the, you know, psychotropic drugs, and they want them to be dumbed down. Like, look at all the years.
How does this? I mean, everything you've just said, and Adam, you've said is true.
Yeah.
However, how does choice? We're talking about, you know, pro-life, pro-choice, contribute to all of that.
So, so the pro-life, it's a. How does it contribute to the
demise of devolution?
Okay. Well, the numbers projected to the numbers of people on the planet projected back in the 60s were they thought it was going to be something like 10 or 12 billion people on the planet. So Margaret Sanger and her ilk convinced everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of people, to kill off their own babies so that it there is no family structure, there is no you know, if they destroy the family, then the product of that family is an open vessel for the government's will. So if they attack the family because that is an autonomous power center. And if you have grandparents and if you have like a firm moral, you know, if your family has land and stuff, this is power.
Yeah. And you're getting into what Chud and Lanny talk about on their show all the time too, where not the nuclear family is what was pushed in the 40s and 50s, which is an extermination of the traditional family, the extended family, which all stays together and lives together and is like a little autonomous mutual aid society that doesn't need government intervention. You've got like, you know, people that with like-minded morals that spend time together. Like you go to church, you spend time with your family, you have land.
The church is a bigger family too.
Yep.
They destroyed that as well. They destroyed the church for the same reason.
Yeah. We talk about that, like how in the 80s, people of our generation were fed this horrible evangelical Christianity that's just watered, dumbed down, like empty, spiritless.
Satanic.
Yeah. Like, And now you talk to most people who are 40 years old, like us. I don't know how old you are, Sean, but
I'm 42.
Yeah, me too. And so you talk to most people our age about Christianity and they recoil from it like a hot flame.
Because yeah. I was a Satanist in high school.
Yeah.
Like I've snapped like a rubber band.
We're the opposite of what we are today.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I was kind of the same. Like I hated religion, but now that I've learned, I understand that I hated the mind control and the domination and like, that's really, so I've just like, I've refined my understanding. So now like, I don't hate religion. That helps a lot of people, you know?
Yeah.
It's a system of, you know, inner work, and that's, it's beautiful. Like it, you know, it's at all humans should experience in some way, some level of spirituality. Like, I think that's part of being human, but so like, I've grown out of being a Satanist. Like, and I, you know, I love people. I see them as another consciousness like me, you know. But in the, like, they destroy the family, and then that ends up, then they make the parents divorce, and then, you know, and they give them circumcision, and they give them neglect, and they, you know, give them, you know, all the video games and schooling and all that. So the kid is like nihilistic and self-loathing. And then that way the kid grows up to be a de facto Satanist and does satanic works in the world. And that furthers the control of the controllers. They are satanic. They have no morals. They want to instill that in us so that it creates a world that they can understand and they can control better. A satanic mind.
When you're using the word satanic, I'm just curious, the way I'm hearing it, and mm-hmm. I want to see that you agree, is like that they're not necessarily quote unquote worshiping Satan or whatever, but they're totally self-centric.
Yes.
I am the center of the universe. Yes. Therefore all things
revolve around materialism.
Me, and if you
take spirituality out of people's lives, it's just this is all there is.
Yeah.
It's just pressing buttons on your phone, buying more stuff. And it's just make me happy and feel good until the lights go out.
Like in the beginning of Fight Club there, where he's buying all the stuff.
Yeah, all the IKEA stuff. And he's obsessing over mail order catalogs. And it's just like, as soon as they get us that way and that people aren't thinking about what's after this, if we go on, if there's a heaven, if there's reincarnation, whatever,
or what's happening now, like maybe what's happening now is a spiritual thing, like, you know what I mean, like,
as soon as they get you there and people think that the lights are going to go out, that's how we start ushering it's and getting fear. Out there, but that's how we start getting transhumanism, people that want to live forever. 75 year olds who've lived a full life, who are terrified to go outside without four masks and a face shield now, who think that they need to postpone this as long as they can because there's nothing else there. It's like, oh, I don't want to see my grandchildren or my regular children because the air might make me die. I need to squeeze as much out of this fruitless rock as we can, you know, because there's nothing else. And as soon as I'm gone, I'm gone.
Yeah. So it breeds narcissism, or not narcissism, it breeds nihilism, you know, like if this is all we got and we're in this prison world where we got to pay taxes and people just kill and rob, and you know, it's you get mad that you're here, you know, and it leads to this satanic ideal where you want to fight the creator, and you want to work with fear because fear controlled you your whole life, so be the one to instill fear on others and then you control them, you know, where they're working on that kind of involution decay. They believe that's where the power is, and then they use that to, I mean, look at the news, they keep us in fear, you know, and that way everybody's just reacting instead of thinking. It's real simple, really. Magic is basically manipulating other people's minds to make them do your will.
Creating intention in other people for the will. The bad magic is doing that, you know.
Right. Yeah. Taking their will and making it your own, you know. And that's what, like, if they ask, if they try to get this law, or if they do have this law where they make the child comfortable while they talk to the mother and ask her if she wants to keep it. I mean, they're not talking and asking. What they're doing is coercing and saying you should kill it.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, they just want a moment to give to give more mind control, to really hammer it in, you know, like Chud was saying, if you don't want to take a certain injection, they come in one after another, trying to get you, convince you. You know, like I had a priest at a Roman Catholic birthing center trying to convince me to inject my son with fucking vitamin K or some shit. I'm like, why is this Catholic priest? They had all kinds of shit that I refused, you know, and like it's like they get the priest to convince him. Like, really? I mean, it's sick, you know, and when a parent is in that situation where everything's new and it's all happening at once, like we're vulnerable to being, you know, so well, that's
you've mentioned, you know, the doctors trying to convince the mother. What doctors?
The people that gave that
delivery doctor.
That delivered the baby. Then they make the baby comfortable with drugs.
Wait a second.
This is the law that they were talking about earlier.
This is in Virginia.
Deborah, ask your question
specifically.
We've talked about this ad infinitum. What's the question?
This is really happening, that doctors are coming in and saying you're, for whatever, what do they say, that your child is disabled or.
I haven't witnessed any of this, but politicians are suggesting that it's happening.
Okay.
They also, what they do is they, the law requires that they have a ultrasound at a certain point in the pregnancy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this ultrasound is to inspect the fetus, to see the baby, to see if it has any malformations or Down syndrome or something. And the only thing they can do is terminate. So like they look at it and they tell the mother, I think it's got Down syndrome. You should terminate. And turns out that like 3/4 of the people that had terminated because of doctor's suggestion after this ultrasound, I'm not sure about the number, but lots of them were false positives. Those babies would have been healthy, but the doctor just chose with
bad measurements. They base those things on measurements of skull size and development and things like that.
So
goes back to what the Nazis did.
Let me just throw this in real quick. I mentioned earlier a former coworker who had a baby much too early. That was based, and that baby is 16, maybe even 8, maybe an adult by now. That was because of an ultrasound that they said this baby was much too large and that it could possibly kill the mother to birth the baby. They C-sectioned it 6 weeks or so early, and it ended up being tiny and needing to be on a form of life support. This is a long time ago, so I don't have the details perfectly, but it was like they barely kept this baby alive to eventually get well enough that, you know, probably about 6 weeks later, she came home from the hospital with her baby once it grew to be a decent
six
size.
6 weeks.
And that baby is now a man.
Poor baby. Yeah, that poor baby had to deal with 6 weeks in that place.
And I would be willing to bet they were religious, so they probably just didn't even pay attention. But I would bet that that whole thing started with them telling them they should abort the baby. They refused to do that.
Right.
And then they said, well, since you're refusing to do it, we have to C-section it way too early.
Now we have to torture you. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so another go ahead.
These doctors, who has influenced them? Who are they controlled by?
They're controlled by Margaret Sanger and their ilk. The eugenicists.
Or even culture.
Yeah, that too. Well, I mean, they're trained like Ron Paul has a podcast called Liberty Report. I listen to like every day. He's great.
Oh, good for you. I don't listen as much anymore as I
used
to.
Oh man, he's great. He's a voluntarist, you know, he does the government thing, but at heart he's an anarchist, I can tell, you know.
Yeah, anyway. Absolutely.
So like he was talking about because he was a gynecologist.
I've got the Ralph Northam thing on YouTube right now. I can play it if you guys want it. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, that's fine. Let me just finish this thought real quick. Yeah. Ron Paul was in school learning how, you know, to be a baby delivery doctor.
Yeah, he's an OBGYN. That's
yes. And in the class, the doctor, the guy that was training him made sure to tell everybody it's a fetus. Don't call it a baby. And they like hammered that in. And he's like, yeah, but it's a baby. And he's like, no. It's a fetus. And like, so the doctors are trained to think a certain way. And then one time Ron Paul walked into a room after they had aborted a baby, and it was in the waste bin or whatever, like the receptacle, and it was moving and trying to breathe and gasping for air. And they just weren't paying attention to it. Like it was not a thing, like it was an inanimate object. So this is the training that they have. And then they also they're inculcated with the belief that we are overpopulated, which is also a lie. They think that the world doesn't have enough fossil fuels, which is also a lie. You know, they're built with this satanic worldview, so they perpetuate it. Like I said, if the Satanists can instill a satanic worldview, then that golem of a slave is just going to go keep doing that. It's like they set it with, you know, they winded it up, and now it's going, and it's going to do what they wish, you know. It's a way of perpetuating their magic. And the killing of the babies, even it goes back to their ancient Babylonian religion, where they sacrifice babies to Moloch. Their god Moloch. Yeah, well, Moloch is the fires where they dump the babies in. And so it's like Jesus, or well, Moses changed the law and made it so that now you only have to snip the end of their penis off, you know, instead of killing the firstborn. And then that went for a while. And then Jesus like changed the law again, like, you know, you don't have to snip the end off, and now you can eat whatever you want, like whatever, that kind of thing. It's slowly like becoming more moral, you know, like at least now we're at the Jesus stage. Like, that's great. I think we should stay here, you know, but the Satanists want to keep, they're pushing to really change the mind of the people. And they've got the television, they got the news, they got everything that we absorb information with. They pretty much have control over, and except for this, you know, this type of thing here, where, you know, like my show or your show, where we're people that care, and like I don't even really make money. I mean, it's like I get a donation here and there, and I'm very thankful.
Yeah, same here. I mean,
yeah, and it's beautiful, and the people care, and they want to share, and like so that's the same thing with me. I care, and I want to share this information. Like Margaret Sanger is, because of what she did, there's like 4 billion less people on the planet. More black babies die.
That statistic that you're saying right now is insane. Yeah. More black babies die every year through abortion than are born.
Yes, that's a fact. And if black lives really mattered, they would burn down those Planned Parenthood places.
Deborah, 20% of African American, I don't know if it's African American or all black people, but 20% of African American babies or pregnancies end in abortion. 1 out of 5. Okay, let's listen to this, guys.
Interest committee hearing yesterday when Fairfax County Delegate Kathy Tran made her case for lifting restrictions on third trimester abortions, as well as other restrictions now in place. And she was pressed by a Republican delegate about whether her bill would permit an abortion, even as a woman is essentially dilating, ready to give birth. And she answered that it would permit an abortion at that stage of labor. Do you support her measure and explain her answer?
Yeah, I wasn't there, Julie, and I certainly can't speak for Delegate Tran, but I will tell you one, first thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, you know, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers, and this is why.
What do you think, Deborah? That's extremely I'm not trying to get you in a gotcha. I'm just loud, Deborah.
The decision should be made by the mother. The mother always has a chance to kill her babies. You know what I mean? She could stab them with a knife when nobody's there, when she's got them at home, and she's gonna, you know, like that is always possible. but
it's incremental, you know. You get to hear, and then wait another 50 years and the discussion will be, well, after you've taken the baby home and you're 6 weeks into it, and it, you start that realizing that you know, I just won't
stop crying.
I'm, well, what they're gonna do, the next step is they're gonna have the government do it, because the mother can't do that. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be like, oh, we'll save you from your baby that you can't take care of, that you're frustrated with because he's crying again and you want to just have a break, you know, we'll take it off your hands. We'll put it in the, you know, we'll churn them up and we'll use them in the vaccines. We'll put them in the makeup. We'll use it for our injections, you know, whatever. They use the baby parts. They sell them, you know, they sell living babies too, but that's just, we don't know that. It's on the black market, you know. Talk to the Clintons about that. Like,
I used to have,
knock on wood, I don't feel, I'm not gonna, I would never kill myself, knock on wood, I had, be gone.
I used to,
they're gonna get me.
Okay. I used to have a girlfriend who had a child. I was like a stepfather for a long time, and before I married Deborah's daughter. Mm-hmm. And she was a young mother who was poor. She had a bad home life, and she's from the same place as Deborah, same county, Marin County, which is a really wealthy area of Northern California. At one of her prenatal visits, the gynecologist told her that if she wasn't ready to be a mom, that he had someone lined up and she would receive $150,000.
Wow.
For her baby. That's what happens too.
Wow. Oh, black market. Okay. Straight up black market. Let me give me the baby parts. So that, yeah, that
not to have an abortion, but to sell her living.
I thought baby. That's where you were going, but
no.
Yeah.
Well, okay. They do that too. They sell them. I mean, I've seen documentaries of people in Eastern Europe that are selling their baby. They're pregnant and they sell the baby to black market. The kids get used for either organs or for abuse, like the sell them to pedophiles or sell them to satanic cults, and they use them in the rituals. They chop them up, you know, they feed on them.
And I mean there's a chance that it was just going to be some really wealthy rich family that wanted
that's what they tell the mother.
Yeah.
It's not always that.
No, I'm not saying it's always that.
I'm not saying that either. But what I'm saying is they always tell the mother that, but it's not that. You know what I mean? Like once the mother's consent happens, then the evil starts. Like that's how it is in this world. They need your consent. That's why all the mind control. Because like if they didn't need your consent, they wouldn't make you sign a piece of paper that says you're going to pay the taxes. If they didn't need consent, they wouldn't. You know, they like the way that this reality is. It's a free world's free will system. The creator gave us free will, and they recognize that, and they can't go against that because then they would incur karmic repercussions. So that's why all the mind control, because they need us to consent. So that's why they want to convince the mother. That's why they want the mother to be the one choosing, because then it's not them choosing it, you know. But even if the case where they had the government come in to kill the baby, like I said in the hypothetical earlier, it would still be her signing a piece of paper. You know, there's contracts to this, so that way they skirt the karmic repercussions. They get their way without having done evil in their satanic morality system, you know.
Where does Roe v. Wade fall in this?
What do you mean in this? Like,
do
I think it's wrong or something?
No, were the people who were fighting for abortion, were they influenced by?
Yeah, they were duped. The woman who was involved in that thought that she was wrong, she wanted to recant everything later.
It's a complicated story with her, is that she was she never had an abortion, Deborah. She was like a pretty down and out, like drug addict, alcoholic woman, and she was just, there's a documentary about her. It's made from a leftist point of view, but she was used by both sides and kept in like a place to live and drugs and alcohol for the rest of her life, to just say whichever side was giving her stuff at that time wanted her to say.
Do you happen to recall the name of the documentary?
No, but I've seen it's out there. I'm sure if you look up Roe v. Wade documentary, you'd find it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she never had that abortion, and then the moral majority trotted her out in like the 80s and 90s to say that abortion's wrong, and they gave her money so she could continue her bad habits, and then the left did the same at some point, and it just kind of flip-flopped back and forth.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
So
that's how they control the musicians and all the creative people, like with drugs and
so I don't know, it's like it's messed up.
Yeah, I mean, Roe v. Wade, like it's like that one's a camel under the nose under the tent as well, you know. That's the beginning of like before they had legal laws of, you know, killing or of sterilizing feeble-minded people, and they would just deem them feeble-minded by this arbitrary a moral relative scale type thing. Yeah, where they, and it's the same thing where when that clip of the guy is saying, oh, viable is a subjective term.
Yeah,
whoever is choosing, whoever is deciding.
Deformed. What's deformed? It's missing a pinky, right? And they can tell its foot's a little weird. It's
right. Just a little ugly.
Yeah, it's got a weird shaped head in the womb. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, oh, it's got some good body parts. We want to buy them we want to sell them to these people. So I'll convince you to throw it away. You know, like it's sick. And like what they need the abortions for their science, you know, they can't stop the abortions. And when the voting down of Roe v. Wade, that's not going to stop any abortions.
Right.
It's just going to take it out of the hands of the federal government.
Yeah. Just gives it.
So now the states can like ramp it up.
So you know what I mean? So what do you think of, I mean, what about that document being leaked?
I think that was on purpose.
Okay.
That's on purpose to divide us. Uh-huh. It's a very divisive, like moral subjects like burning the flag or like abortion are very dividing, because you know, people connect with their ego to their morals, and if you say your morals are bad, they defend it like it's their self, you know.
Uh-huh. So this is the other team, you know. And it's right. and Deborah, like we've discovered so many times on this show, is the news cycle has to keep rolling over and over and over. And that was what, 2 weeks ago? That was the talking point 2 weeks ago. Now it was Ukraine. It was COVID. Yeah,
now it's shooters.
Now it's monkeypox and
oh yeah, that
and schools.
No,
school
that was shootings. That was a few days ago. Adam. Right, school shootings today.
Yeah, we're on school shootings today.
Now,
even though that school shooter doesn't seem to be a domestic terrorist because it's a trans Mexican, but you know.
Oh yeah, only guns kill people, not trans Mexicans.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It's Does that make sense, Deborah? It's just more and more division to keep people divided and keep our eyes off what's maybe happening beyond the scenes. And I've tried to stress this to you over and over and over and over.
It divides the family.
When something happens, you got to take a step back and be like, okay,
yeah,
what's going on with this? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
What if I look down this road a little bit more? Where does it lead me? Or what else is going on? What are they doing? What's getting passed through Congress right now? Yeah. Well, this is in the news cycle. You know?
What are they trying to hide from us? Well, they're showing us this other thing.
Yeah.
You know, like who, cares about Johnny Depp and whatever the hell is going on? You know what I mean?
It's like, okay, so they're showing me Bono in a subway station in Ukraine. What else is going on? You know, like
what's actually
Bono,
going
on? Yeah. Bono is one of them. He's a bloodline family.
He is the worst man. Yeah. Oh, Mark, have you ever talked to Mark Devlin?
Oh yeah. Mark and I are friends. Yeah.
That's awesome, man.
He was, I was on his show like years ago.
Yeah.
And we're going to be speaking, well, virtually online conference in September on the 24th of September. It's a Saturday. We're having a 1-day conference. He's talking about the music again, you know, the music's whole thing. And I'm talking about circumcision, talking about how it's like it destroys minds and it's satanic, you know, child sacrifice, all that.
Yeah.
But it's going to be great. It's called Shattering the Illusion. And you can find more about that, shatteringtheillusion.info. And Mark Passio is going to be speaking there too.
Oh, rad.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. It's like a 1-day thing. We're each going to have like an hour. So, but it's,
yeah, I just listened to Mark's new fiction book on Audible. It was pretty cool. There's a total Mark Passio guy in there. A guy that's supposed to be him.
Oh, Mark Devlin's fiction book, right?
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, exactly.
And he's got like all these like crazy Easter eggs through people's names and stuff.
That book
like
is
that.
Great. Yeah, Mark is very talented.
It's called The Cause and the Cure. It's a really cool book. I tried to get Mark. I talked to Mark Devlin. He was super cool.
He's
went
awesome.
Back and emailed back and forth. I tried to get him on the show and he's like, dude, I'm sorry. I'm so busy.
It's
right
tough.
Now.
He's busy. Yeah.
He's like, I'll do it in the fall. But up until then, I'm not really doing anymore.
Yeah. But, we were scheduled. I was scheduled to be on his show and we had to cancel because something he's got a lot going on. He's got a family.
Yeah.
But you know, like I applaud everything that he is doing. Like he's really keeping the focus on human freedom. And I love his podcast there. The sound of freedom is like his music show.
I've never heard his podcast.
His podcast is called Good Vibrations.
Okay.
It's awesome. It's great. You should definitely listen.
Let's check it out.
Yeah, well, DJ Mark Devlin.com, I think.
So, yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I think we've gotten into enough uncomfortable talking points for the day to give Deborah.
Are you okay, Deborah?
Deborah looks a little disturbed.
I am disturbed.
Deborah one more moment of
uncomfortableness. Let her get comfortable.
I don't think Lanny has told this on a podcast, so I don't want to go too far on it. So I'll do it kind of briefly. But you were asking what the motivations of the doctors that would be behind this would be. And Sean, you gave a great response that has to do with consent. You're so spot on about all those things.
Thank you.
But sometimes I think that it's a little sometimes the doctors don't know what they're saying.
Yeah.
I believe. True. And my evidence of this is Lanny's story to tell. But when we found out we were pregnant with our last child, we found that out on March 13th of 2020. And that was the same day that Donald Trump declared lockdown.
Oh, yeah.
We called our conventional doctor, who we don't use for much except for to be able to prove to people that we're somewhat part of a system.
But Lanny's had a lifelong relationship with this person, right?
No. Okay. She has retired.
Okay. Her predecessor, right?
Yes, correct.
Or her successor.
Successor, yes.
Yeah.
And she's a pretty good person. I mean, she doesn't push vaccines on us too much. You know, she seems to, I'm sure she's a shill in the way every doctor is, but she kind of leaves us to our own devices and lets us make our own decisions. And it works okay for our family.
That's good.
When on the 14th, she found out that Lanny told her we're certain that we're pregnant. Her immediate response was, "What are you going to do?" She asked three or four different ways, do you want to abort? She never said the word abort.
Wow.
But she wasn't letting her get off that. It wasn't a phone call, a FaceTime call, or whatever it is, Zoom, you know, I don't know, whatever. she was her best trying to convince her, because she at that time in our county, they were talking quarantining all newborns for 14 days upon delivery.
Oh, are and you kidding? She's going to come in the world said, with coronavirus, the thing.
Yes. That's crazy. And she basically wouldn't take absolutely not as an answer. And I don't think in any way she was going, because I want that fetus. I think that she was simply concerned for anyone having a baby in that trying time that we were in. She just, culture had influenced this one female doctor to the position where she felt it was her moral duty to avoid allowing people to have babies in that moment.
A true Satanist. What a,
yeah.
What a I bitch. Think, Deborah, I really want to applaud you for keeping your cool and being so receptive to all this stuff that we're talking about. Cause we probably have before, I mean, maybe you've put a couple little things in your brain to think about, but I think it's important to realize that it's a decision that's based in morality. And I think that that's the first things first goal is to take the morality out of it. And
that's how they do it.
And I think, you know, it gets so bogged down in feminism and women's right to choose and female, they call it reproductive rights. That's words have meaning, Deborah. Always think that it's not
when
reproductive
they, when it's rights. The opposite of what they say it is, that's satanic, right?
It's there. An inversion, right. Satanic inversion.
Right.
And up is down.
Yeah.
Right. And down.
Yeah. Ignorance is strength.
Yeah. And so I want to commend you for keeping your cool and asking good questions. And
may I ask if there's anything in your stuck in your craw? Can I help like alleviate that before we go? I'm sorry. I know we might be running out of time, but
no.
Yeah. It's everything is swirling.
Okay.
So I can't pin down a single thing right now, but
okay.
It is. It's a new way to look at it for me. That's for damn sure.
Right.
Just know that this third trimester post birth stuff is out there, and people that have governmental power are talking about it and considering it.
Right.
Just know that it's out. It's not us.
Right.
Like I know a lot of stuff we talked about would get piled into that crazy conspiracy stuff, but they're saying the quiet parts out loud now, Deborah.
Right.
It's out there.
And we can see as it pushes, the next things will come. It won't be just killing babies. They'll want to use the parts. They'll want to make it okay to eat them. They will keep pushing it. It won't stop there.
What's what our good buddy David Icke would refer to as the totalitarian tiptoe.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or it's what, if you want to get even lamer about what you're going to call, I like David Icke. Jordan Peterson talks about how when they're trying to get stuff through, they'll run up and get right in your face and yell about some stuff to you that's totally crazy. Mm. And then you'll take one step back.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll stop. And then they'll go do it again and again and again and again. And it's over a
just like they were doing
time,
with the passports. Like they were pushing miles. That passport thing. Yep. And then they let off, oh, we're not going to do passports.
Yeah, because people stood up against it and then it came back.
Now it's coming back again. And they're trying to put it under the radar when they got this other thing is happening. And, oh, we got a war, guys. Oh, we got, you know, celebrities in court. You know, this one slapped that one. you know, look over there, you know. And meanwhile, like, you know, the Ghislaine is probably telling people things and like, you know, she's like still like she's convicted, but we don't get to know who she worked for and like what she was serving
they just reduced her sentence by 10 years.
Right.
They did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they reduced the ability of like how how the maximum that the judge could, because they didn't give her a sentence yet.
Okay.
They're like still in limbo, but he reduced the maximum number that they could give her, which was like, they're giving her stuff because she's probably giving them stuff.
Yeah. I think she's singing.
Yeah.
She's,
right.
Well, she's probably saying that she's going to sing if they don't start.
Well, she's got to save herself. She doesn't want to Epstein herself, you know?
Yeah. But if she starts talking about people, there's gonna be lots of people.
And it's an integral system that requires the use of children, the abuse of children, because in order to become part of the structure of power, you need to show and be documented that you have no morals. So the higher up you go in the system, like if you can prove in a ritual that you will do some demoralizing thing or harm some innocent thing, animal or person, then when they watch your reaction and then they're like, okay, he's good. And then they tap him on the shoulder and they bring him up to the next level. And that's how it works. At the top, they have no morals because they've weeded that out. In order to control this satanic system, they need people that are satanic in their mind. So they aggregate from society with the different secret societies and they pull them up through the ranks.
Yeah. And we'll see that through brownstone operations like Epstein and, you know, back to one of our first shows ever, Deborah Franklin scandal. You know, they have these giant they have parties at these lavish penthouse apartments, you know. 10 o'clock rolls around, everybody's had a couple drinks, maybe they pull out a little bit of cocaine, and a 14-year-old young boy comes out.
I mean,
and a lot of guys, the local county comptroller's there and he goes, whoa, what the hell's going on here? I think I should go home to my family because I gotta wake up for church tomorrow.
That guy
stays comptroller forever. The guy that sticks around,
that's the Blue Lodge mayor. Masons.
Yeah.
Right.
They got like a Blue Lodge Mason compared to graduating to Scottish Rite, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. They keep them down below and then they're worker bees and they don't know what they're working for. You know, just like the Minions, the Masons, you know, that movie, the Minions, the Despicable Me.
Yeah.
It's like they're the worker bees and they got the G and the compass and the square, you know, on their shirt. And they're wearing blue and they got like blue everything because they're the,
you know what,
the
you know what's a funny one too is they're blue and yellow.
Yeah,
that just dawned on me.
Yeah,
I haven't thought about those.
Everything's blue and yellow, Deborah.
And if you look at the
Ukraine flag,
all right, that too. Yeah, if you look at the posters for the Despicable Me 3, the third one, there is a pyramid of minions, and the one at the top has one eye.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And he's top, for real. And he's stepping down on the others. And the ones that have two eyes are like dopey, dirt, dirt. They're sticking their tongue out like,
but he's laser focused.
Yep. He's like, I'm in control. Ha ha. And then the one that's directly under him is like closing one eye. He's in the process of closing an eye and he's recognizing that he's getting stepped on and like
maybe has his hand tucked into his overalls.
I didn't see that. No, I'm just but for real, but that one is in the process of becoming one eye. He's like the next step below and he realizes he's in a hierarchical structure and he disagrees. He's like, no, I don't want to be here.
I bet you
it's really interesting that poster.
Figure out some gematria with that pyramid too, and maybe the one-eyed guy is that somehow equates to 32. The guy like this is 32, the actual one-eyed guy is 33.
He's 33, right. That makes
sense. We gotta do a count.
And there's also one more one-eyed guy down below and he's the enforcer. He's like on the lowest level and he's like smiling happy because he's in charge, you know, but he's also in the club. He's one of the, you know, ascended Masons, you know, still lower than the guy at the top, but he's in the fray with the other ones, keeping them in line. You know, it's he's the cop and military, you know. It's really, I should like talk about Minions movie like someday. Do a show about it. I mean, because they're like training the youth of the Masons. The Masons will show that movie to their kids and get them to like all of those symbols. And then when the kid grows up, those symbols are already inside. So they'll recognize it and, you know, relate to it in a better way.
Those movies really, really land with kids, I think, because of their lack of language that that kids understand without having to understand. There's no big words, but they understand everything that the minions all the are faces. Talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, if you notice, the minions, they speak every language.
Oh, yeah.
It's just they babble. That's Babylon.
They're babbling on.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly that. When, you know, when God destroyed the Tower of Babel, he split up the languages into a bunch of different languages, and they're speaking the original language of Babel. Like, they're, it's there's some real occult stuff there.
Yeah.
And if you look at the timestamps, I'm sorry, this really isn't a Bob Margaret Sanger. But if you look at the times when things happen in that movie or in the other movies, there are significant numbers, like in the Minions movie at 33
minutes. I'm sorry to interrupt. I have an appointment I have to get to. So I'm really sorry. I've been interrupting this whole thing.
We're starting the next two.
I'm glad to meet you. The show's
I'm glad to meet you. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad to have helped Red Pill you.
Happy to have met you. And I hope we're going to do
likewise.
Ice Wide Shut or whatever you want.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. I'll talk about Kubrick all day. All
right. That's okay. Great. Bye, guys.
Bye, Deborah. Love you.
Bye.
Sorry, you guys. I'm really veering off the topic, but just to get this one last thought out, at 33 minutes in the Minions movie, Minions are looking for a new master, you know, the most evil, and they help to pull a Dracula out of his coffin. And that is the interned apprentice. That's like a Masonic ritual. That's like the second degree. And his lair has like a black and white checkered floor, and like the moment that he's lifted out is 33, you know. I think there was maybe confetti at 33 minutes, but like, check timestamps in these movies, that kind of thing relates.
Man, yeah, that's something I've never tuned into. I heard you talking about that with William Ramsey on Eyes Wide Shut. I listened to those, and that's an interesting angle. I watch a lot of movies. I'm a movie head, and I've never really paid attention to timestamps. And when you were talking about that, it really struck me. Like, maybe that's something I should be paying more attention to.
Yeah, man, it's a total other level of information that they can use. You know what I mean? And if you understand with numerology and gematria and all these things, occultists can use that. And the way that like a movie is built, kind of the same span of time as your REM sleep, the cycle of random or rapid eye movement sleep is about like 45 minutes. So like two of those is like an hour and a half, just about. And so like, that's how they build the movie to be like a dream cycle, so that your mind picks it up like a dream and uses those images in your brain like a dream. So that the time in the time of the way that the movie occurs is significant, I think, to the cycle of REM. And if you look at Eyes Wide Shut, it syncs with itself at like 18 minutes or something. One of the characters says to another one, keep her here for another hour.
Yeah. That's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah,
that's what really landed with me.
And then at an hour and eight, and then at an hour and 18, what happens?
It's the same woman who's on the couch is the same one who's like behind the mask. They're kissing mask to mask right at that moment.
Yeah,
and
there's no way that's random.
Yes, exactly. And if you skip ahead another hour, then it's because the guy says, keep her here for an hour, and he says, another hour, like that, like, is another hour, or, you know. So if you skip, it's like 1 hour segments, and if you skip ahead to that, it's the billiard room where he's learning that Mandy is the girl who was at the ritual, who was in the bathroom. It's the same. It's like telling the same story of the same character, like, so it's like reiterating, and that it's using the time cycle to do that. Yeah. So if you pause the movie, pretty much I did this, like I pause the movie pretty much anywhere, and then I skip ahead an hour, and it relates, like, you know, he'll be like, you know, he'll say wake up, and then I'll skip ahead an hour, and it's Alice, he's waking up Alice, and she's like, oh, from her dream. Like it's very interesting, and it goes very deep. I should do a video about that too. Yeah.
Well, we'll get you on.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We'll do some
research. This has been fun. You guys are great. Yeah,
this is great, man. I love hearing your natural law perspective on everything. And
thank you.
If you go back,
you're a good ally in this sphere of stuff. Cheers. For sure. I think we could talk all day.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, and if you ever wanted to talk about other anarchist principles and that kind of thing, I'm fluent in that kind of language, and you know, also mind control and what they're doing, the whole zeitgeist. Like, so
Your stuff about mind control and consent was so spot on. I really appreciated that.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to bring it to the table, and cheers thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I really appreciate it, Sean. Guys, thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you soon. Go check out. Oh, plug away, Sean.
Oh, yeah. Wake
the Dead podcast.
Yeah, Wake the Dead podcast. And you can find that anywhere. Like, just Wake the Dead, search that. And I'm on Odyssey, Rumble, BitChute as well. You can see the videos. I'm on the One Great Work Network. Mark Passio's network. He's handpicked other anarchists that understand the nature of reality to and given them a place to where all our voices are together. And so click around in the creator section, see some of the other people. There's big names and other names like myself who are just starting out, and we're all, you know, we all understand that the morality of it, and you know, we're doing our part, you know. And so the onegreatworknetwork.com, you can find me in the creator section, and I post all my stuff there, the videos. And you can find Wake the Dead on Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, all that stuff. I'm pretty much anywhere there. And I am doing I have a event, shatteringtheillusion.info. You can learn more about it, who's going to be there, when it is. It's totally free, and we just want people to get the message. So a lot of people are putting together some presentations. Mark Devlin is doing one, and Mark Passio as well, and myself, and some others that I very much respect, and I'm very glad that we're doing this together. It's great. And I sell t-shirts. You can find that at storefrontier.com/wakethedead. And there's anarchist designs, fine art photography. Please, it helps put a little money in my pocket. I work 6 days a week. You know, I'm a working Joe. So any little bit counts. And thank you very much. So cheers.
Great. Thanks, Sean.
Awesome.
Go later.
Bye. Peace out, everybody.